Blog Talk Radio.
Good morning, everybody. Welcome back to Renee's Heart to Heart. Thanks for coming by this morning. You know, on the news this week, there were pictures, video of a 90-year-old guy who has been for many, many years now feeding the poor, the homeless in most cases, in a kitchen that he, you know, uses big main dishes, big tins full of food, and pretty long lines. And for some reason, Fort Lauderdale decided that they didn't like to see that. And I haven't been able to find any reasoning behind that, just that it's true that you can't feed the homeless on the streets of Fort Lauderdale. So they arrested him. They warned him, and then they arrested him. And he is going to take them to court, which he has done once before and won. So here's the question I'm posting this morning. Why would Fort Lauderdale make it illegal to feed the poor? Every day we see the homeless in all of our cities and towns. Every day we see the abandoned houses and buildings. Every day we go to businesses and wait in lines, don't get service, can't find help, wait for hours on the phone to speak to a live person. Do you get my drift? Wait for a while. It could be you or me in that food line as the powers that be show up and take the amazing benefactor that was going to give me something to eat away. What the hell? We got to figure out what is going on, because this is not right. This is really, really not right. And it doesn't seem to be changing anytime soon. Now, this week, we were all called in to vote. We were, in some cases, made to feel very ashamed of ourselves if we didn't vote. But here we are, living in the richest country in the world, supposedly. And again, there's people that can't find a job, people that can't get into a place to live. Things are bad. Things are really, really bad. And now we have some sweet old guy who believes that he's supposed to take care of his brother and sister, and he actually got taken away by cops. A cop told him to drop the plate. Give me a break. I'm going to bring in Shell, because I have a feeling I'm, without her to keep me balanced, I might get really angry about this. Good morning, Shell.
Well, good morning, Ray. Well, I'm angry about it, too. I think it's ludicrous. You know, when you look at the type of crime go unchecked the lawlessness on the streets, and our law enforcement is literally wasting their time going after somebody doing a Good Samaritan act, to me it's mind-boggling. I think the police officers should be ashamed of themselves for even following up on something like that.
Well, I mean, we have to believe that their bosses told them what to do. I can't imagine, a street cop deciding, oh, yeah, well, that's illegal now. I'm going to give them a warning.
I'm speaking about the police department collectively, not the actual cops that went there.
Okay.
Obviously, they were under orders.
Right.
I don't think that an individual cop would have made that decision. But the police force making a decision to do something, I think is beyond ludicrous.
Well, I could, like I said, I Googled a couple things, you know, like why, how come, and didn't really get any answers. I would have to think because it's a gathering, and we do have laws about gathering without protocol that's in place, licenses, a permit to say that you can gather that many people. And I guess, depending on where it is and if it's, clogging up traffic and stuff like that, part of me can see a little bit of reason for why it needs to be organized. But why it needs to be discontinued, no matter how I break it down, you know me, I always try to look at the other side of the story, and I can't find another side to this story that warrants this man being able to do this amazing thing that he's doing. He's not even asking for money, Shell.
I know. Yeah, some of the comments, I'm looking at
his
report on this. Some of the comments, I can sort of see it, but I don't think arresting this guy is the answer. I think maybe providing the guy with resources and assistance. They're saying that these strict laws are in place because they need people to be basically organized if they're going to do this, have proper sanitation, do it in an area where they're not maybe blocking traffic or affecting other homeowners and things like that. And I can sort of see that.
Mm-hmm.
They want it done in
gathering. Yeah, right, me too. I saw all that. Right.
And, you know, so they're saying the supporters of the strict law say that allowing programs like Abbott's encourages homelessness. I think that's absolutely nonsense. I don't think you can encourage somebody to be and I don't think just
homeless.
To provide food for them, they're going to say, oh, okay, well, I'm getting fed every day, so I'm going to stay homeless. So that right there is absolutely a completely ignorant attitude, and I can't even believe that there are supporters that go there, that thinking just because somebody gets a hot meal a day, that's going to make them decide to remain homeless. They're homeless because of certain life circumstances. It could be tragedies that befell them. It could be some sort of an addiction. But the bottom line is something befell that person, and it's not that they weren't getting a hot meal. So that's ludicrous. But that's what they say here. Supporters say that programs like this actually encourage homelessness, which is utter nonsense. The people feeding them are enablers, and they enable the homeless by making their lives easier. Hunger is a big motivator. Are people more likely to seek help when they're hungry or when they're fed and happy? See, that's such an overly simplistic attitude. These people are where they are not because they're hungry, but because of life circumstances. So all this guy is doing is kind of taking the edge off their suffering. The only thing I can see, one of the journalists in here makes a comment that homeless people, especially when they're in groups, cause sanitation problems and loitering, and that I can kind of see. So if you've got a big group of homeless people and a lot of them loiter afterwards, it can be unseemly. They kind of go wherever they want to go, if you know what I mean. And so it can cause sanitation issues, and that's, I think, one of the reasons why they don't want him doing this in an unsanctioned way, in an unorganized way. And I think that's what the town is reacting to, not the fact that he was doing a Good Samaritan act, but he's not doing it in a sanctioned or organized way to deal with some of the problems being created by his Good Samaritan act.
Yes, but that's not what the law says. The law just says, according to what I read, that it's just about feeding the homeless, period. It doesn't go into all of that unless I read what you're reading, but it still doesn't make a whole lot of sense to me. And I'll tell you why.
I know, because it says right here, Fort Lauderdale passed an ordinance that included new regulations on where and how groups can provide food. So it allows for it, but it allows for it in a controlled manner.
Well, and before I even read that, I figured that was, you know, the biggest reason. But again, it's all this great big snowball effect. You can't get a place to live, Shelley, if you can't prove income, if you've ever had any kind of felony against you, which in some cases is repetitive DUIs. You can't get a home if you don't have a certain number on your credit rating. So it's not just about being able to find a home and having the money to pay for it anymore. It's about whether you're an upstanding citizen by the criteria that has been set for us. Now,
All right.
The other thing that bothers me about all of this is the thing that we've talked about from the very beginning, and we've even had people on the show that are advocates for the homeless. There was a thing on Facebook the other day, how many abandoned homes or homes that are empty could give each homeless person in the state of Florida 3 new houses to live in? Reported homeless, of course, this is. That doesn't mean how many people are living in the back room of somebody's house or how many people are living in their car. a lot of our homeless people, if they're lucky enough to have a vehicle, that's where they live. But my point is here is it's become a convoluted mess. You have all these issues. So if they don't want sweet old man to give out food, let him use one of these empty buildings.
Mm-hmm.
Make it easier for him to organize it. Make it more, easier is the only word I can come up with. If they want him to meet certain criteria, help him make the criteria because he's doing a service. There's nobody that I know that functions better when they're hungry. Nobody. There's nobody I know that is not above stealing a Twinkie or a container of chocolate milk out of a 7-Eleven if they haven't eaten in 2 days. All these things, for me, add up to much more worrisome crimes than anything they're saying about this. Oh, geez, isn't it too bad that they're going to take up some room on the street? So then give them a designated area and don't make him pay $300 for the permit every week when he's already paying for all the food.
Exactly.
It's called working with each other, making things work. All these jerks that have been on the TV for the last 6 months for the mayoral race, the government, the governor race, all these things, the school system, the legalizing marijuana, all these things that have bombarded us. And nobody talks about the fact. Well, they talk about it, but it's like an atrocity that they can't do anything about. But they can. There's lots of things they can do. And
mm-hmm.
I get that people that there are some people who are homeless, and I've said this before, and matter of fact, the young man that talked on the show that day got upset with me because I said sometimes I think it's a choice. And I didn't mean that it was really, you know, like, oh, let's see, do I want to be homeless or do I want to have a house on the beach? Obviously, you want to have a house on the beach. I don't mean that kind of a choice. I mean that they give up. I mean that they don't want to fight with somebody because they have a bad credit score, because they lost their job, or because they can't keep a job, or because they have addictions, or because they have issues. Whatever the reason is, we all have them. Some of us are lucky enough to overcome them, and some of us are not. But the point is here is that if we're supposed to be working for each other, if we're supposed to be looking out for each other, which is what we talk about every day and what a lot of other people in this world talk about, this is not it. This is not it. Why didn't the cops, when they came to see this old gentleman, say, you know what, we think it's great that you're doing this, but you know, this isn't okay because you're blocking traffic, or this isn't okay because now everybody's leaving their plastic forks and their plates laying in the lawn. I know about stuff like that because I've done for a lot of people in my lifetime. And some of those efforts on my part were richly, richly rewarded. And some of them came with a slap in the face. That's life.
Mm-hmm.
That's just life.
Mm-hmm.
So this bothers me because it's just another opportunity for our regulators, our law enforcement, the people that make sure that everything is happening the way the people that sit so far removed from the streets have set up. That's another issue that bugs me. But they should be able to, work through that.
I'm reading part of this article here. Listen to this little section here. Now, this is Abbott talking, the 90-year-old guy, and he said, I have tried to abide by regulations, but we are just not able to provide a porta potty. So evidently that's one of the things you have to do is to provide bathroom facilities. He said, I believe that is a job of the municipality. Now, I agree with that. Why isn't the... doing something like this, why can't he put in a request and say, look, I'm going to be doing this. I need a porta potty and have the city put that out. You know, he's spending all the rest of the money preparing them, donating the food. Why can't the city chip in and help him with that? You know, says cited along with Abbott were Dwayne Black, pastor of the Sanctuary Church, and Mark Sims of St. Mary Magdalene Episcopal Church in Coral Springs. Although they were not handcuffed and taken to jail, they were cited and must appear in the court. So they were cited along with him. They just weren't arrested along with him. The ordinance, now this is the government, this is the Fort Lauderdale Police Department. The ordinance allows for legal, clean, and safe distribution of food for the homeless. For example, if a minister, priest, or member of the clergy wishes to provide food to the homeless at their establishment, they can do so if the proper facilities are there, as listed in the ordinance, and that they are in place. So then it goes further. Sims says, which I like, Sims acknowledges that Fort Lauderdale has a problem with homelessness, but he says that the answer, this is the pastor of the Episcopal Church, Sims acknowledges that Fort Lauderdale has a problem with homelessness, but says the answer isn't laws that make it hard to feed the people. It's not an easy issue. It's not cut and dried, Sims says. But what is cut and dried is that people deserve to eat when they are hungry, and people of faith are compelled to reach out to people who are in need. I think that's a very simplistic, cut and dried, and right to the point comment that he just made. And I think that our laws should be slated in such a way that it would assist somebody of that mindset, not make it harder for them to be generous.
Well, I'm sorry. That, of course, is the question of the day, right there. When you have somebody who is willing to give of themselves, of their own resources, of what they believe in, to a need, a big need, not a little need, a big need, then instead of them being ostracized or nitpicked to be doing, you know, the right thing, they should be embraced and they should be supported. It only makes sense to me to do it that way. And that is our issue at the end of the day with everything, Shell. Look at all the crap we went through at the Institute when locals thought that, you know, everybody that came there was some kind of an occult.
Yeah.
And neighbors would, you know, go to county and complain about the Institute all the time. Look at what's happening with the sober houses. The sober houses that are getting set up all over everywhere because there's a need. There's a big need for that. And it's an issue. And it's not something you can just say, well, that's that asshole because he doesn't know what he's doing and he doesn't care if he's a drunk or he doesn't care if he's a drug addict. He likes that life. Then you don't know anything about addiction. You're going to say that about the smokers now? Because that's real close to where we're getting with the smokers. The smokers are ostracized. Do I think they should be? Yes, because I don't want anybody to smoke. It's ridiculous. I don't want anybody to smoke. It kills you.
Right.
But I also get that
people have a right,
you know,
to choose or not they're going to smoke because it's their own personal health, but they don't have the right to subject me to the smoke because I've chosen to be a non-smoker. That's where,
but that's not the point I'm making. You're right about that. I don't smoke either, and I've been subjected to secondhand smoke my whole life. No, the point I'm making is that you can't just say somebody deserves everything that's happening to them because they can't make a better choice or because they can't change it. You know, that's
I agree with
it's, you. It's not about that. And the same with these homeless and the same with people that, you know, are just in a bad place.
Mm-hmm.
And you never know. Unless you are privy to their diary, you don't know what's going on. Or privy to their head, you don't know what's going on. So judging them is your shortcoming, not theirs, yours. So this sweet old guy, and I say that simply from, you know, face value, because he's doing what he's doing. He could be a jerk. I don't know. But
well,
I do
listen,
see
listen
somebody...
Rini, listen to this. This is further down on the article. I don't know if you read this or not already, but this shows that he really is a sweet old guy. Sims, the pastor, continues to say we need to work harder to solve the problem rather than just shutting it down. What he means by shutting the help down, okay, rather than just shutting it down. He added, Abbott said, and then this is what Sims said. Now we're on to Abbott. Abbott said there is a simple explanation to Fort Lauderdale's outsized homeless population. Okay, now Abbott is the 90-year-old guy. The homeless people come here for the weather, he said. They know they won't freeze to death in Fort Lauderdale. So people are coming from northern areas to the southern part of Florida because it gets very, very cold in the northern areas. All right. Abbott, a World War II veteran who won 2 Purple Hearts as an infantryman, said he won't stop the fight he has dedicated to his wife. She tried to help as many poor and homeless people as she could, said Abbott, a retired jewelry salesman who grew up in Philadelphia. When I lost her, I decided the best tribute to her would be a full-time program in her name. In addition to feeding the homeless, Love Thy Neighbor operates a culinary training program that Abbott says has helped more than 400 people learn food service skills. So he's not just some old guy who's out there trying to make a difference here and there. He's dedicating his life to making a difference and raising awareness about homelessness and doing something positive. This man should get some kind of an award from the city. And they'll probably
sit
down with him. He probably has incredible ideas on how to fix this problem.
Well, but, you know, again, it's about the real powers that be aren't listening, and the ones that are listening don't really care. They don't get involved to that great depth. But it's just like all the different organizations. I mean, when I go to the Neighbors for Neighbors meetings and meet all these people who have dedicated their own time, energy, money, everything to make things better for all kinds of people, whether it's organizing new sneakers for kids, backpacks, lunch buckets, lunches. There's all kinds of people out there that are doing all this kind of stuff because we all see the need. And I think should stop? Do I think government should take care of all that? No, of course I don't. But I do think that the government should embrace these people that are doing this kind of work and this kind of job instead
Absolutely.
Of advising them. If they really don't want him to be where he's, you know, doing this, where he's setting up in Fort Lauderdale, then they need to find him a place where it's appropriate. They're the authority. They're the people that know where it won't cause any traffic backup or, like you, the bathrooms. That's probably why he did it on the beach, because on the beach there's bathrooms.
Right,
you know, that's
exactly.
Probably set up the time on the beach because there's public restrooms, and that makes sense. And there's also on the beach there's giant garbage receptacles. It seems to me like the guy thinks he's not some, you know, fly-by-night, let's do this week, and then we'll do it if we have time next week. But he's dedicated himself, like you just read. I know that some of the things that I read, you even have judges that are, if you'll excuse the pun, very judgmental in regard to these
yep.
And they fine people, and they, you know, you have to have rules, and you have to have this, and you have to have that. And I think we get that, and we know that you can't. You know, 2 years ago, when you and I started doing this show, we talked about doing a big festival to gather together all the people that we know care. All these people from Neighbors to Neighbors, the guy that is a this old man would be perfect, the people that work in all these different arenas that give out food, give out turkeys, They're starting the collection now, right now, for the Thanksgiving food collection. That's already started. The man that started doing that so many years ago, that's all over the news. Drop off your canned goods. If you're in an elementary school here in South Florida and teachers have picked up on the fact that your clothes are old and that maybe there may be some struggles and maybe you've been accepted on the free lunch program or anything, at Thanksgiving, your family gets a box with canned goods, maybe vegetables and stuff like that that would go towards your Thanksgiving dinner. So we know that people really care, but they don't want to be inconvenienced by it. That's the tough part, and that's the hard part. And if you raise a family, you're inconvenienced every day. And anybody who tells you they're not is lying to you or lying to themselves. There is no convenience about life, because life hits you with all kinds of crap, inconvenient crap, if you will, and you deal with it. And that's what this. It is a fact of life that we have too many homeless people. It is a fact of life that there are abandoned homes that are rotting into the ground where somebody could be living because somebody wants too much money for them or somebody thinks that they're entitled to too much money for them. There is people that can't find a job, that their unemployment has run out, and they can't find anything to do to earn an income. Why? Because maybe they're not the most amazing, shining star. Maybe they have issues. Maybe their background check doesn't come out good. Maybe they got arrested when they were 17 for smoking weed. Maybe they got arrested when they were 17 for something worse. Maybe they did all kinds of things. But now they're in a better place. They're trying to grow up. They're trying to do the things that they need to do. Nobody will let them now. And when I tell 17-year-olds that you better be careful what you do because you can ruin your whole life, I mean that. I mean that. Because your history follows you everywhere today. So, but in the meantime, you got these houses rotting into the ground. You got people looking for a job, and yet every place you go, and I mean this, I don't care where we're talking about, whether you're talking about Walmart, the DMV, the doctor's office, I don't care where you're talking about. They need more help because people aren't being taken care of. People are sitting and waiting for 3 to 5 hours in some places. That's because there's not enough help. That's because
issues, something that we had talked about the other day, and I've mentioned this before, and the reason I'm so sensitive to it is because as a troubleshooter, a corporate troubleshooter, I have found this problem over and over and over again. A lot of the companies that I had to go into, and I became like an analyst where I would go into a company and I would kind of say, you know, what steps were missing. I've done it at like 4 different companies. So I would go in, I would work in every department, and then I would identify why things were slipping through the cracks, why shipments were going out wrong or things weren't being, you know, entered in the computer properly or whatever. But whatever was causing the problems, and everybody always pointed the finger at another department. We're doing everything right. That department's doing something wrong. And what I found is that when the companies were smaller, when it was more of a everybody had to pitch in and do everything, so you'd have somebody doing a job, but they did a lot of extra stuff as a part of that job because they were the only one in that area. So they did everything that came across their desk. They had nobody to delegate it to. They did everything. But then as the company would get bigger and this person would start delegating, things would fall through the cracks because they would delegate to an assistant a bunch of stuff, and then some of the extra stuff that didn't really fit their job title anymore, didn't fit the assistant's job title anymore, just sort of stopped being done. And then this person would hire another assistant, and it would get bigger and bigger and bigger. So now the job that used to be done by one person is now spread across 6 people. And a bunch of these extra tasks are now falling through the cracks. And you have this whole big picture, this whole job task now being done in bits and pieces by different people, and each person becomes tunnel visioned, where all they're going to do is what it says on their job title, and they're assuming that the other five people in their department are going to take care of this extra stuff. So it becomes, well, that's not what my job calls for. I don't have the authority to do that. That's not in my pay grade or something like that. And you see this happen. As companies get bigger, tasks that were being done by a single person now aren't being done by anybody, because there, you cannot take a job function and put down, cover every single thing that comes up, because so many things that come up are just are idiosyncrasies, are just you know, something unique, and there's no way of covering all the unique situations. So now nobody takes responsibility for it. It's the same thing in government. You have these government officials that are putting up a blind eye instead of having to attack the problem in its totality and saying, okay, this is the problem, how do we fix it? What they're doing is they're dealing just with the element of it that fixes them. So if they're in law enforcement, all they're doing is going out and arresting the guy. They're not getting together with other people. They're not doing anything to fix the problem. They're just dealing with the element that falls into their jurisdiction. And that's the problem when you become so big, so spread out, that different parts of government don't talk to each other. And it would make a lot more sense if all the different factions would get together and come up with a solution. Instead of just keep putting Band-Aids on it, arresting the people who are trying to help, figure out a way to help the people who are trying to help instead of making the problem even worse.
Exactly. Well, I mean, you know, that's exactly what has to be done. And it has to be done soon. Otherwise,
have you ever heard of the practice called Ho'oponopono?
I don't know. Spell it for me. All
right. Ho'oponopono is a Hawaiian. Hang on a second. I got it. This way, guys. Come on. Ho'oponopono is a Hawaiian practice, and it's a beautiful practice. What Ho'oponopono is all about is that I don't remember how it got started. I don't know when it got started. This is from years ago. Hang on a second. I got to get my dogs outside. I'll finish telling the story in a second. I'm going to mute you.
Okay. All right. Well, while Shelley's taking care of her big boys there at her house, let me say that I agree with that, that we have to do something, and we have to do something quickly, because things are just getting worse every day. And every time I turn around and somebody complains about something like this, I realize that, you know, it won't get better by itself. So what can we do? What can we do as people? First of all, maybe some letters, maybe some reaching out to the powers that be and say, help this guy. Help this guy figure out how he can get this done. Support him instead of...
Sorry about that.
All right, go ahead.
Well, anyway, so what Ho'oponopono is all about, and I wish that this could become a national practice, not just something that's with people in Hawaii that practice Ho'oponopono. But what it is it's where if something presents itself in your experience, you are now responsible for it. So they say this prayer. It's if something comes into their awareness, they say, I take full responsibility for this thing, whatever it is, okay? Whether it's something that happened to them personally or something that they're seeing happen in front of them. And what the prayer is, it says, I take full responsibility for this thing. I'm sorry. Please forgive me. Thank you. I love you. And then you have to say the prayer in a particular way. It's actually a practice, a spiritual practice, all right? But it's very, very powerful. And the purpose of that is that people who practice Ho'oponopono believe that anything that crosses their awareness, anything that they see that comes into them, not that they're sitting there watching TV, but they're out and they see something happening in front of them, they believe it's their responsibility that they have to now engage that and try and fix it somehow. And so the purpose of that prayer is to say, look, I didn't create this, but I'm sorry that it's existing, and, you know, and I'm gonna try to do something to fix it. There's some sort of
I think this town was cursed or something, or one guy had done something wrong and the rest of the town was being affected by it. So the town got together, and this is part of the myth, and I'm probably not telling the story 100% correctly, but this town was suffering because of the bad deeds of one person. So they got together and practiced this. They took responsibility for the bad actions of this single individual, and they said this, you know, I'm sorry, please forgive me, thank you, I love you, and everything started straightening out for the town. People, the innocent people, stopped suffering because they took responsibility for the bad actions of this other individual. So I'm starting to study Ho'oponopono because I think it's just an incredible practice, and it kind of goes in line with everything else. But if people would just simply take responsibility for what crosses their desk and run with it and not just, you know, just not rubber stamp it, this goes to another department, this goes to another department, we would see things starting to get fixed. Because the problem is, by the time it gets to a decision maker, they're so far removed, they don't know what they're dealing with. And that's, I think, why some of the bad decisions get made, because by the time it gets to somebody with the authority, they're too far removed to get it, to really make an appropriate decision.
Well, if you remember when, well, you don't because you weren't there yet, when I first started at the Institute, the class on Tuesday morning, and the name of the class was The Buck Stops Here. And that's exactly why I did it, because I saw all these things that were wrong and all these people who thought it wasn't their job. And I thought, until somebody takes responsibility in this small little nucleus of people, workers, guests, everybody, that it wasn't going to work. And I feel exactly the same way about our world. That's why we do this show, because we can't step out there and fix everything. If I had a magic wand, believe me, I'd be out every day just zapping everybody. But you can't. So accepting responsibility to do the things that you can do is certainly the name of the game. I would embrace that program, too. I'd like to think that to a certain extent I do already. I feel like if something comes across my desk or my purview and it sinks in, a lot of times we're out there walking around and we're so deep in thought with our own stuff, we don't see a lot of the things that are right in front of our face. I know that. And I think accepting a little responsibility for the plight of others is the most important one. And to remember all the time, every day you should remember, that could be you. That could be you. There used to be a very family, I always thought it was came from Catholicism or Irish or something. But all my aunts and uncles would say this all the time. They'd see somebody who was in trouble or having an issue, and they'd say, "There but for the grace of God go I." And what that means is that could be me tomorrow. That could be me tomorrow. And it could be. And if you think it couldn't, think again. Look at all the people that we've seen in history, all the stories we've told, the people who were wealthy beyond their wildest dreams. And all of a sudden, they're not. They have the world by the tush. And all of a sudden, they don't. Anything can happen to anybody.
Exactly.
Until we start embracing programs like what you're talking about, that's not going to change. Very sadly, that's not going to change. So, what do you think we can do? Here's my thought. Again, like I said yesterday, I had a really busy yesterday, so I couldn't do some of the things that I wanted to do. So I'm hoping later this afternoon I can sit at the computer. I want to email Rick Scott about inspectors. I want to do a few things like that to get some things rolling about some of the things that we're doing on the show. But what can we do about this? Do you think it makes sense to, I don't even know who, I'd have to think about this. I'm sure I'd think of something, but we have to contact somebody. And first of all, support this man and the two churches that he represents and understand, you know, that we're seeing both sides of the stories, because we understand that you can't oh, I'm congested this morning. Must be something in the air. We have to understand that there are issues when you gather that many people together, and there has to be bathrooms, and there has to be receptacles for garbage. I mean, you and I have done enough festivals and gatherings with a large amount of people to know that there are certain things that just have to be taken care of. So understanding that, why doesn't, here on the corner of Lake Worth and Jog, there's a completely empty Denny's with a giant parking lot all around it. Two parking lots over is another strip of a whole bunch of empty buildings. You see them all over. Drive down through Palm Beach, drive down through Fort Lauderdale, Deerfield, Pompano, all those places. There's all these empty places everywhere.
Well, one of the things that I would highly recommend, there's actually a couple of things. Number one is for people to become better educated, and I'm not saying this to be insulting, okay? I'm saying it to be accurate, to learn more about a situation and not be ignorant as to why the situation exists. People who have never been touched by homelessness, they don't have a friend or family member that ever became that that disparaged, they don't, you know, they've never had it touch their lives, tend to have an arrogant attitude towards it, like these homeless people must have done something to make this happen to them, okay, which is an extremely ignorant attitude. But I've met people that think that way. So they're very uncompassionate, and they believe it's a problem that needs to deal with itself, that they shouldn't have any part in the solution. So that's one thing. For people to understand what homelessness is, the type of people that are homeless, the single mothers with children because the breadwinner maybe died either in a crime or from a disease, and now you have this mother with kids, can't support them, okay? Or it's somebody that had some sort of an accident and now can't support themselves anymore and they lose their home. I mean, yes, some part of homelessness is people that have addiction problems, but that's an issue also. You know, now that I know genetically, true addicts have a genetic defect. So let's find a way of helping them, because there is a way of dealing with that genetic defect and getting these people okay without drugging them, okay? So once you understand more about the issue, then you can start looking to solutions, and those solutions are not turning your face away and saying, this isn't my problem. That's never the solution, okay? So that's one thing. The second thing is this guy, Abbott, speaking specifically for what's going on in Fort Lauderdale now, he actually has a website that's pretty cool. It's called lovethyneighbor.org, lovethyneighbor.org, and there's no spaces between the words. They just run together. And then you go on there, and it's about us, the programs he runs, culinary training, feeding program, event calendar, compassion for kids, and success stories. He's got his resources on here, Face of the Homeless. So he put the, it's a very nicely done website, Face of the Homeless. So he does this to kind of educate people. He has How to Help, volunteering your time, making a donation, and then contacting us. So I think that might be a good idea, is to start. One way to help is for people to become more aware of how this problem even arises, who the people that are homeless are, so that you don't have an ignorant attitude towards it, so you don't have an inappropriate attitude towards homelessness. Because part of the reason that homeless, this is my opinion, I believe that one of the reasons that homelessness is so prevalent is that a great vast number of people don't believe it's a societal problem. They believe it's a personal problem. It's a personal problem to that person who became homeless. It's not my problem. I can't do anything about it. They're going to have to fix their own lives. They got themselves into this mess. Get themselves out. And I think that's the pervasive attitude and why homelessness isn't being dealt with, because people have that kind of inappropriate, arrogant attitude. And I see it a lot. So then when you have these people that are compassionate and trying to make a difference, they're dealt with this arrogance, and they're dealt with, I don't want it in my city.
you know, if you want to help them, go find a back alley somewhere, but I don't want it in my city. I don't want it in on my clean, polished streets. So I think those two things are one of the reasons why this situation isn't being dealt with more effectively and more compassionately. I think if more people started dealing with this issue with compassion and looking to solve it, not sweep it into the back alleys and out of their vision, it would have, it could have gone away already. Look, like you said, all these abandoned homes, all this money being used by very, very wealthy people for nonsense. You know, let's redirect these funds in a place that can actually make a difference. Let's get programs in place to help these homeless people. And as they clean up their act, make them volunteers to help other homeless people. It can actually be a self-perpetuating practice where as people get on their feet better and are helped, now they can turn around, and that can be one of the guidelines. Listen, we'll help you here, but then once we help you, then you have to turn around and help us help other people. And it can be almost like a self, I can't think of the word, but it's, you know, where it builds on itself, type of a program.
Well, that would be, I think that would be very motivating for most people to be a part of their own journey, and that's very important. But let me say this. There are a lot of people out there that do a lot of different things, like I said earlier, to help people and to make a difference. But the criteria to be helped, I'm talking about government, the criteria to be helped is so convoluted, so thick, it's like walking in quicksand for most people. And if they can't get help figuring out how to work the ropes, then they can't jump them. And that's the truth. There is stuff out there. We know that. There's welfare. There's Section 8. There's all these government things that are set up, but unless you are, first of all, so dedicated to just getting it managed for yourself, which means you probably can't have a job because it's a job just figuring out how to get it. So if you do have a job, if you're lucky enough to have one of these whopping $7.92 an hour jobs, that doesn't even put food on your table once they take out all the taxes and do everything else that they have to do to you, then you probably don't have time for some of these programs. And I mean,
I'm sorry. I think there's going to be a lot of people that are going to disagree with this, and I don't care. I don't think somebody making minimum wage should even have taxes taken out of their paycheck. I think it's ridiculous that somebody making that kind of money and the government still tipping into it, and then you have somebody who makes $200,000 a year, and they can create so many tax deductions that they end up paying next to nothing. And here the person who is making next to nothing has to chip in a part of that because they can't do anything with their money that gives them a tax break. It's ridiculous.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's an understatement. That whole sentence that you just said is an understatement, and it is a major issue.
But one of the problems, what you just described, is what I was talking about a few minutes ago, is that in order for people to get, you know, people always say, oh, well, there's government programs out there, there's government help out there. But like you said, it's so convoluted and so difficult to take advantage of. You know, it really takes somebody who's government to even be able to utilize any of these programs. I tried to help my niece recently get some assistance because her husband was moving from one job to the other, and for a few months he was in a state of where the money was very, very tight, and they actually were having problems putting food on the table. So she didn't want any kind of welfare assistance; she just wanted food stamps, you know. And it took us almost a month to finally. We had to refile the forms three times because they would ask her for information. She would send them the information, but they wouldn't key up the information for like 24 to 48 hours, and in that time, they denied her claim. Meanwhile, she sent the stuff in on time, but because somebody over there didn't put it in her folder, they closed her application out, denied her because she didn't provide the information on time. And then once she proved to them that she did provide it on time, they said, well, you have to reapply anyway. There's nothing. I can't reopen it once we close it. So they made the error, but she had to start. She did this 3 times, Rainey. I kid you not. Okay. It takes over an hour to fill the forms out to begin with. Okay, because I helped her do it online here, and each time it took an hour, it's like, oh, my God. And I'm reading some of these questions, and they're so asinine. I'm like, why in the hell would they need to know this to approve this person for food stamps? Some of the questions were mind-boggling to me, you know. We finally got it, you know, and then now, thank God, you know, her husband's in a much better place. The other job ended up working out fine and all that. So she ended up getting the assistance. But what about people that don't have a computer at their house that maybe have to go to the library or something and do this, you know, and then it keeps getting kicked back. And it's like, you know, at least I can sit here in the comfort of my home and do it and help my niece out that way. But there's a lot of people that don't have that. And what if you're actually homeless and you don't and you're trying to get this? How do you work it out then? You know, how do you even find out about it?
That's what I said yesterday about unemployment, honey. Do you know how many people I know that never collected their unemployment, even though the employment office offers you computers and offers you this? But if you don't know anything about computers, you're embarrassed. You are, and it's like maybe not both hands are tied behind your back, but certainly one is. So it's outrageous. It just has, the system is so flawed.
Impersonal.
Just so impersonal, so flawed, so like if you have any struggles whatsoever, you probably can't figure out most of what's going on today. And that's the truth. I'll tell you something. I help so many people, and this is not to toot my own very large horn, but it is the truth, because they need somebody who's done it before.
Otherwise, it's
too difficult to make it happen. Doctor's visits are outrageous, because not one doctor takes care of you anymore, ever. 15 doctors, if you're really sick, you'll have on your list. Of course, and it's ridiculous. It's ridiculous because it's not necessary, first of all. But it's been a way for them to manifest more insurance money. And I hate to say that, but it's true. It is what it is. So, but I think that our biggest issue today is realizing that we have to put some care back into our days, some thought about how what we do is affecting others, some realization that our behavior has a trickle effect. Until we start worrying a little bit about the person that's standing next to us, none of this is ever going to change. I said this almost 5 years ago at the first lecture I ever gave about what happened to my grandson. Even in the animal kingdom, where it's survival of the fittest, they treat each other better than we do.
It's true.
Even in the animal kingdom, because there's a mutual respect that we very often lack. And it's gotten way, way out of hand. And I mean, if you watch the video of what they did to Abbott, you'll see the lack of respect. And the, I don't know, it's sad what they did. And everybody badmouths Hitler, right?
Yeah.
Where are we different, Shelley?
I know.
It's not blonde-haired, blue eyes, it's how much money is in your bank account.
Yeah, I would love to see a way of, and we're kind of trying to do this with our radio show by putting these thoughts out there, because you never know who's listening and who may be inspired to, you know, pick up what we're saying and run with it, you know. But I would love to see somebody who could research all the different groups like this. Like Abbott has Love Thy Neighbor, and it's a beautiful website with a lot of information. I'm sure there are websites like this all over the country of people
that have taken up this as a life mission of theirs, because homelessness is so prevalent everywhere, and there's a lot of people who do care, you know, either because it touched their lives or it touched the lives of somebody they know, or they're just spiritually compassionate that way, okay? There's a lot of reasons why somebody would be drawn to help these people, you know? But if somebody could maybe create a coalition, tie all their resources together and start doing brainstorming, start looking for solutions that can be presented to government, start looking at what the laws are in different areas and saying, look, this law is counterproductive because it's making it too hard to make a positive change. There has to be a way of accommodating the essence of a law, of saying, okay, I understand this law is here because if there's too many people there and there's no bathroom facilities and there's no this and there's no that, how do we get around that? How do we get around that effectively and somehow support this, these people in their efforts to make a positive difference in our city? You know, take, like you said, take abandoned homes, take abandoned restaurants. You see this restaurant shut down. Why not take that restaurant and turn it into a government-run soup kitchen where there's a bathroom facility available? And you know, and there are soup kitchens, but there's not enough of them. There should be more, you know. And then you see during voting time, you see all these commercials come out about how these government officials misappropriated this money and misappropriated that money, and Scott stole billions of dollars from the taxpayers, and it makes you nauseous. It's
and
like, oh, my
jail.
God.
And he's not in jail, Shelley.
Exactly.
You know, it was okay because he was doing it because he was, you know, trying to help us, right?
But think about that. If there's that much money floating around government that we're talking billions of dollars can be misappropriated, I mean, that, and then you see a situation like this where hundreds of thousands of dollars would make a dramatic difference. And it's mind-boggling. It's because the people who want to make the compassionate decisions don't have control of the money. And that's why when you start raising awareness, when you start raising more consciousness, and that's kind of where we're going as a people on planet Earth right now, although sometimes it doesn't seem that way, we are, more and more people are becoming aware that these problems should not exist and that something positive should be done. And when we get to that tipping point where the majority feels that way, then we're going to start holding politicians accountable to make better decisions and use our money to solve these problems and not band-aid them or cover them up.
Mm-hmm. Well, let's hope. Let's hope that that's really going to happen in our lifetime.
We're headed
hope that. Huh?
I said I believe that's where we're headed. I think because there's a lot more people today that are becoming aware, that are becoming compassionate, and unfortunately, most of the people that aren't are the people that are controlling the money right now, but that's even starting to shift. You're seeing some true philanthropists. Cynthia Stafford is a beautiful example. She came into a very large amount of money, and she uses quite a lot of her wealth for philanthropic endeavors. She donates a lot. She's created two foundations. So here, this is a woman who went from near poverty to like being an instant millionaire, and she's just done extraordinary things with her money. So, you know, I watch people like that. You know, instead of just hoarding it and going out and doing, and she's done some good things for her and her family as well. Mm-hmm. But her,
well, you have to take care of home first; otherwise, you're no good to anybody else.
Right, right.
So,
but
we have to cut it. We have a whole minute. I thought we were down to 18 seconds. So yeah, I've read about her.
But the only thing she believes is that that money is a responsibility, that it's our entitlement, that we're entitled to have wealth, but that it is our responsibility to be generous with that wealth and not hoard it for ourselves. So she does for her family. She's very generous. She even bought herself a Bentley. So, I mean, she's not cheap, but she's created all these foundations to now share her wealth with random people, and she does remarkable things.
Mm-hmm. Well, and I think that is, you know, that's what's going to have to happen with all of us, because all of us are rich in different ways. Rich doesn't always come in the form of a dollar bill. And those of us that have other gifts that can share, that means just as much, especially if all it means is that you're standing beside Mr. Abbott and dishing out the food with him and smiling at people. Even that has its worth. So, but we're done for today. We'll be back tomorrow for a week in review and talk about all of this stuff again, and maybe between then and now we can think of a mass way to get people, the powers that be, know that we're watching and paying attention. So God bless everybody. Go out and have a great day. Thanks, Shell.
Thanks, Rainey. Thanks, everyone, for listening.